No, as Francis read the scripture, I hear the scripture read a couple times during the morning by the liturgist in the early service and this service, and sometimes things pop out at me. And so I stop sometimes to make sure that I jot down what it is I'm thinking about. Because I'll forget as I get going through here, I'll forget what that thought was. And it may not fit, but we'll see. Do you have a friend, loved one perhaps, co-worker, neighbor, relative, spouse, maybe, who runs over at the mouth? Someone who opens their mouth and seemingly can't stop whatever random, ridiculous thought is rattling around in their head from just spilling out. That uncle at family gatherings who rambles on and on about how the government can see into your home through computer monitors. That neighbor who is only too happy to share with you their 18th century enlightened views on interracial dating. Or that spouse that you have to watch very closely at parties, or they're going to embarrass you by way oversharing intimate details of your grooming routine. By the way, if you can't think of someone when I describe that way, it's you. What is it with humans and our mouths? This thing is directly wired into our brain. And yet, sometimes you would wonder. We have the innate ability to cause pain and havoc, chaos and tumult, not with instruments of war, not with guns and knives and bombs, not with weapons of brutality, but with simple words and phrases. We open our mouths and great sonnets could come forth, great soliloquies could come out to enrich and build up, to lift our world higher, to touch hearts and mold minds, to make life better and more beautiful. But so often, far too often, we open these wretched portals of waste and just blah. We forget Jeremiah's words when Jeremiah was called by God. God reached down and said, I will touch your mouth. It'll be my words in there. We forget that when we took Jesus into our heart, that was not the only organ where Jesus dwelt, but our mouths as well. Sometimes we open our lips and it is just garbage. Whatever insanely selfish, hateful, ill-thought-out, cockamamie notion is floating around in this cobwebbed crazy factory, we just throw out into the world and see what will happen. How many times have you said something and immediately seen the pain, the anger, the hurt that it has caused? And you feel bad. You know you shouldn't have done that. You can feel that twinge of shame and regret for turning that verbal sludge loose. And yet down deep inside, in places we don't talk about in pleasant company, somewhere we don't like to admit to, down deep in there, when we said it, when we saw that happen, we feel that small twinge of selfish satisfaction. For just a moment, with our words, we wielded power. And that power hurt. We wielded chaos, and that chaos caused destruction in a tiny form for just a moment, but that moment burns warmly. Because it means someone else got hurt and not us. That moment feeds our selfishness and greed. in that moment, you know you will do it again. You will use words of destruction and hate and pain again because it felt good to hurt someone else and not be hurt. I've done it. I've been the one who opened his mouth and garbage rained forth. I've been the one who uttered words of pain and sorrow and saw immediately the impact and the damage such words wreak on the world. I have been the one that has said words that have ended friendships, that has damaged relationships, that has caused heartache and grief. I have been that noisy gong, that clanging cymbal, rattling forth without love. I have been the one that has wielded that power, that destructive power over another, and basked in its warm, selfish glow for just a moment. If we want good examples of what hateful, harmful, ridiculously insane speech looks like, we are in luck with the Iowa caucuses tomorrow. The election season is in full swing. I know it seems like it's been going on for about 1,000 years already, but in all reality, tomorrow is when the green flag drops. Over the coming days, weeks, and months, we will get the honor of being inundated with horribly asinine examples of what not to say ever to anyone, anywhere. By the very clowns we were being asked to pick from for leader of the country. I swear to you, when they come to the debates, they should be forced to drive together in the same car so they can spill out of it like Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey. It is amazing to me what hateful, ignorant, short-sighted, separating speech is now accepted as political posturing. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. Is there any better description of our politicians today? Like that crazy uncle at the family reunion somehow got a hold of a microphone and somebody put him on stage. But if I'm being truthful, I can't really blame the candidates, can I? I mean, when we get right down to the brass tacks of it, they are simply a mirror being held up to the worst of us. They are simply reflecting back to us the values, the positions, our own selfishness and arrogance and pride and fear. They are simply saying what we whisper, what we mutter in the dark corners, what we have been saying the whole time. They just get to do it in front of a camera with a microphone for the whole world to see. But their hate, their vitriol, it is ours. We have been spewing it long before this circus came to town. And we have been doing it in the name of God. Paul tells us, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. That makes sense. Children don't know any better. You can look online, watch YouTube or Facebook. You can see all kinds of videos of children saying amazingly silly, simple, even dumb things. But they don't know any better. They're kids, right? And we laugh and we chuckle and we go, isn't that cute? But if that was a 30-year-old man saying it, we'd think that maybe he got hit in the head. Because as we're adults, we should know better. It's the same in our relationship with Christ. Before I knew Christ, I was that child, that silly, simple, dumb child. So of course I said and did simple, dumb things. Of course, silly, stupid things came out of my mouth. Of course I said selfish and hateful and greedy things. But now I know Jesus. Paul is talking about our journey of faith. As we mature in our faith, as we go from before we knew Jesus to knowing Jesus to after knowing Jesus, there should be a difference. I should not still be speaking as a child. I should be speaking as an adult. And Paul gives us an example. example of what that looks like in 1 Corinthians 13. What is probably the most used, famous piece of wedding scripture in the history of weddings. I do about 20 to 30 weddings a year, and a half to two-thirds of them, this scripture is used somehow. At my own wedding, it was on the invitations to the wedding, on the wedding announcement card. 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, love is kind, it is not envious or boastful or rude or arrogant, it holds no record of wrongs, love rejoices in the truth, it hopes all things, bears all things, endures all things. We read that at these weddings over and over and over, and as a result, sometimes we can tend to just glaze over with it, right? Somebody starts reading 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, right? Wake me when they get to the I do part. I've heard this one before. It happens. Trust me, as many times as I've heard, there's times when I'm not doing that reading, where I'm at a wedding, and I'll lose my place because I'll just stop listening. And all of a sudden I realize it's quiet again, and I'm probably the one that should be talking now. But you know, something I started doing this last year, because I hear it so much, I had to do something. So I talked to the bride and groom. If I'm the one reading it, I'll say to them, as I read this scripture, I don't want you to hear the word love. Instead, in your mind, as I'm reading it, I want you to substitute in the name of your spouse. As you're standing here getting ready to enter into this covenant, this promise, this lifetime journey, hear their name in this passage. See these qualities upon them. Give them this character for a moment as you're getting ready to hold their hand and walk forever down this path of life. See them in this role. It would be like this, for example. If I were to say to Katie and David down there, if I were to say, Katie, when you hear this scripture, you hear David's name. And I were to say, David is kind. David is patient. He is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. David does not insist on his own way. Not looking to start a fight in the pews. David is not irritable or resentful. He does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but David rejoices in the truth. David bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. I tell them to embrace this passage and see this person that they're about to bind their heart to as embodying this ideal of love. I do this because I believe this passage is God's instructions to us on how we are to be more like God. As Christians, when we read this passage, when we hear this passage, we should place God in the place of the word love. After all, 1 John 4:8 tells us God is love, so it's a perfectly acceptable replacement to put in. And this is how we are to be. God is love, John tells us. And whoever wants to know God must love like God, because God is patient and God is kind, because God hopes, endures, believes. How would this filter applied to our refuse-filled, garbage-spouting pie holes make the world a different place? How would your world, your life, your family, your work, your friends, your walk be different if this filter that we so often just stop listening to because we've heard it 1,000 times, if this filter was instead strapped across our yawning gaps and we had to run every word, every phrase, every sentence, every paragraph through it first? Before I wade into a political discussion or a discussion on schools or discussion on crime or discussion on my neighbor's unseemly habit of walking around in front of his windows with very few clothes on late at night. If you're ever romantically wanting to see a full moon, come on over to my place. What if instead, before I said anything, before I let loose, Any thoughts that have been rattling around? What if first I strapped this filter on? What if I placed myself in this passage before I utter one more insidiously hurtful thing? And I say first, I am patient. I am kind. I am not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. I do not insist on my own way. I am not irritable or resentful. I do not rejoice in wrongdoing. I rejoice in the truth. I bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, and endure all things. Would this be enough? Would this stop our hurtful, hateful comments from imbuing the world with our selfish, self-centered, self-satisfying rubbish? Would it instead help us to paint the world with beauty? Would it instead help us to build up, to heal, to support, to gently touch and change our world? Would it change our political process if we asked the dozen or so imbeciles jockeying for our attention, until of course they can get in office and go back to ignoring us completely, if we were to first ask them to pledge to this: say whatever you want, but first promise us that you will be patient and kind, hopeful and truthful. Now you may speak about your plans for the highest office in our land. I don't know, probably not. If we're being truthful, probably not. But it can change us. It can change our little corner of the world. It can make